Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast. It's episodes 1, 3. Oh, God, I got to check my sheet. 131. I am Mo. I'm joined today by Elle, Deputy Editor of Metal Hammer. How are you doing, Elle?
I'm good, thanks. I ate a whole packet of Jaffa Cakes yesterday. That's my news.
Yeah. Party on. Oh, man. I literally never have Jaffa Cakes if I'm not in the office. That just makes you think of being in the office.
Oh.
Miss you guys. I'm also joined by Metal Hammer Reviews editor, Jonathan Seltzer. How are you doing, sir?
I'm pretty good. I'm currently experiencing a Chinese chili oil high.
Okay.
I love the stuff I just put on everything. So I just had lunch and just smeared everything with it. And I'm kind of slightly dripping out a little bit, but either way. So let's see how the next 45 minutes to an hour goes.
So we're all indulging in different experiences, basically. Yeah. Don't forget that the latest issue of Metal Hammer is out right now, featuring Metallica on the cover, as well as picking the issue up from Magazines Direct. We're at now. We're at a new place. You can find Metal Hammer. We've also got some really cool subscription deals going on at the moment. If you want to get the magazine before anybody else and also get some exclusive covers every now and again and all this kind of stuff, subscribing is still the best way to support the mag. So we very much appreciate it. So go to Magazines Direct to find out how to do all of that. Did you listen to that little Code Orange album that they put out on Friday? I know it caught us a bit unawares. No.
It caught me unawares.
It caught you so unawares. Yeah, they released it is a live album. It was recorded live, but it was recorded for a live stream that they did a couple of weeks back. I don't know if anyone kind of listening saw it, but it was very, very kind of 90s MTV Unplugged, Alice in Chains vibes, kind of candles lit over the stage, all playing acoustic. Really, really cool. Very, very different. They released an album taken from that called Under the Skin on Friday. And I've been listening to it a little bit. It's really interesting. Some of the kind of reimaginings of the Code Orange tracks work really, really well. Some of them, I think, maybe don't work quite so well because they're kind of such dense, highly produced, layered songs that I think it's quite a challenge to break those down into something a bit different. But it's very, very interesting release, and I definitely recommend people go and check it out because it's just yet more evidence of this band refusing to stay still and kind of refusing to, you know, not keeping putting stuff out, which is great. So that's out now. Go and check that. That's not album of the week, by the way. We've got a different one, but I just thought we'd recommend that.
Unplugged is my favorite Alice in Chains album, so I'm intrigued.
An excellent choice. That's certainly my favorite Unplugged album of all those ones that MTV did. It's just masterfully good.
Hours listening to that album, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. I have the CD and I'm just lie in bed just like looking at the cover and listening to it, just being like, this is the greatest.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, yeah, the Code Orange thing definitely pays tribute to that, and they did actually do a cover of Down in the Hole, which is quite interesting and a very bold choice because that's probably my favorite Alice in Chains song. You can go and hear that and then probably go and listen to all the original MTV Unplugged albums that inspired it. So go Code Orange, basically. Let's do some newsy stuff. Now, before we get on with everything else, I know that there is an ongoing situation with Holywell Records. We've seen that a lot of bands have started to kind of leave the label in light of the things that have been put out there this week. So for any kind of information on that and the latest updates on that situation, your best bet is to head over to metalhammer.co.uk where we're kind of covering all that stuff. Lots of stuff going on for sure. Zealand Ardor have a new EP coming. This took me a bit by surprise, but in a very pleasant way. Manuel Gagneau's Blues and Black Metalers will release Wake of a Nation on October 23rd. They've released two new tracks from the EP, Vigil and I Can't Breathe, quite clearly inspired by the death of George Floyd and addressing the issue of police brutality. So Zealand Ardor's back with a new EP. And it sounds like he's digging into some very serious issues. Did you guys get a chance to listen to these two new tracks he put out? Because I think they're marvellous.
I was really surprised, actually, because I'd read that he was doing bird mask stuff and that was what he was focusing and not on at the moment and not Zealand Ardor. So I was really surprised to hear about this, but it couldn't be more timely. I've ordered the vinyl from Bandcamp for the EP already.
Nice.
Go check it out over there. yeah, Manuel's a brilliant dude and he's got a lot to say and is really innovative. And, you know, the fact that he's writing about the death of George Floyd and addressing police brutality, it's just, yeah, he's really, you know, it's just really interesting and really well-timed.
Yeah, I love the songs. I think they're brilliant, like genuinely quite powerful as well. I mean, his music is powerful by its nature, but when it's kind of constructed in the light of what's going on at the moment, it really, I found it quite affecting actually in a way that
I did too.
Yeah, it was a bit more subdued than his normal, than his albums in a lot of ways. But the fact that he's addressed kind of, you know, slave labor in the past, and so. And the way that his music is constructed, it really feels like this is all part of like what he's talking about with George Floyd, this is all part of a continuity. Because, you get these free floating samples that take them kind of outside of a timeline and make them kind of ever present. So this is a really interesting route for him to go down. And it feels very much an extension of what he's been doing up to this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or an expansion.
And it's really just, you know, I think he's one of the most fascinating young artists in the metal scene right now. And it was fascinating enough with what he's been doing musically. But now that he's kind of going head on with these kind of issues, I just think it's going to make for a really interesting EP. I'm really excited about this. And I'm excited about what it might mean for, you know, how he kind of writes and produces his music moving forwards. Because he's a very unique artist. More exciting news. Do you want to take this one out? Because I know you're excited about this one.
I'm really excited about this one. Killer Be Killed are back.
Yeah.
Obviously, Killer Be Killed features Max Cavalera, Greg Picciotto, Troy Sanders, and Ben Coller. And they're releasing a new album, which is their second one, called Reluctant Hero, by Nuclear Blast on November the 20th. And their song, Deconstructions, it's really hard to say. I'm going to try that again.
I had to do three takes to say this song on the radio show today, literally, because I was like, oh, fucked it again.
This song is called Deconstructing Self-Destruction.
Yeah.
Which is a great title, Deconstructing Self-Destruction. You can hear it on the Metal Hammer website. And it's, yeah, a really powerful, like, metal, modern metal, hard-hitting song. It basically sounds like Backbone by Gojira, but it's just cool and that's fine with me.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I love this track. I like the last album, but I wouldn't say it was something I've stayed listening to a lot of, but
I would say differently. I think it's amazing and it's like it hits all my buttons, you know, presses all my buttons, everything that I like about modern metal.
Well, we are very interested in this new album anyway. I think it's going to be quite an exciting deal. Also in tours getting postponed news, probably not that surprising. Nightwish have postponed their European tour to next spring. It was due to take place this winter. Again, I don't think we could be too surprised at that with the current state of play, but hopefully those dates in spring will all go ahead and then we can celebrate with some lovely bombastic symphonic heavy metal.
I can only guess at what that stage show is going to be like given the state of that record. The record is just mad.
The state of that record.
Probably the wrong word, but it was like, yeah, we were talking about this earlier this week. When before COVID, when we could still go in rooms and listen to albums with other people, I went and listened to this in a studio with some people, and it was literally every moment was like, what the fuck? What is happening now? What is happening now? And I can't imagine how they're going to bring it to the stage. It's going to be insane.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the stage set they had at Roadburn was kind of quite spectacular. I like the way that even like the front of the like the stands for the drums had, you know, formed all part of one big picture. So like everything felt like it was kind of floating.
Yeah, I still feel like they're underrated or maybe underestimated is the right way to put it. Nightwish. I mean, this is a band that headlines Wembley Arena as standard now. Which is crazy for what they do. And yeah, the stage show they're able to piece together as a result of that is pretty crazy. And that last album, Human Nature, was certainly their most ambitious album so far. So yeah, they must be gagging to just get out there and play these songs. And it's just crazy to think that that album came out this year. It came out in what, like February or something? And they've still not been able to kind of get out and tour it.
It's weird. It's like that for so many bands right now. It's just very weird.
Weird, it certainly is. God, we're flying through this week. Let's go on to the album of the week this week. I think it's only one real choice for this, a huge record Marilyn Manson's We Are Chaos is out on Friday. It's his first album in 3 years, the follow-up to 2017's Heaven Upside Down. I think this is a really fascinating album for Manson and a really fascinating period in his career, because the world in which this album is getting released is a very, very different one to the world that that Heaven Upside Down came out in. You know, we live in a post Me Too world now. We live in a kind of very different climate for how we think of rock stars and you know, controversial behavior and all the rest of it. And so it's interesting to see where an artist like Marilyn Manson fits into that. You know, he's been proudly controversial. He's been problematic. You know, he's been all sorts of things over the years. And now, you know, he's in a position where he's got to kind of fit into this very different world we find ourselves in. And I think Jonathan really, who actually reviewed the album for the new issue that's out next week, I think you really nailed it. When you look at this album lyrically, it feels like an album of kind of self-reckoning for Manson in many ways.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's the most cathartic, genuinely cathartic record he's ever done, but it goes through lots of different kinds of emotions. So when I first heard the you know, saw the video for the title track, I was like, what is this? Initially. So it's kind of schmaltzy, a bit playing to the galleries. It's kind of like Get Your Lighters Out. It's not your typical Manson song in any way, least of all after Heaven Upside Down, which was the closest one he got to kind of recapturing his mojo, I felt, since Hollywood. But this feels like, when you listen to the context of the album, it feels like he's not trying to recreate anything from the past. He's in a new place now. And yeah, I just feel this album is very different from anything he's done before. He's not trying to be the Marilyn Manson of the past. He's trying to work out what Marilyn Manson is now, like I said. And it's a process. So, you know, the first song is kind of, it could have been off Heaven Upside Down.
Red, Black and Blue. Yeah, I agree. It's got more of that kind of crunching industrial sound that,
yeah, it's very Ministry.
Most of his music.
It reminds me of Flowers of Evil as well, one of his tracks from a couple of albums back.
Yeah, but then it like the album, I said in the review that the album kind of goes through different stages. So you next get like three kind of what you could call kind of schmaltzy songs, and you know, the track after that, I don't have the track listing in front of me at the moment. What's it? It's One Step Forward. What's it called?
Halfway and One Step Forward. Halfway.
Is that the third track, right?
No, so it goes Red, Black and Blue, We Are Chaos, Don't Chase the Dead, Paint You with My Love, Halfway and One Step Forward.
Yeah, so those next three songs up to Paint You with My Love, you know, Paint You with My Love and that one you just mentioned. Yeah, they're kind of schmaltzy, but just on the right side of it.
There's like a lot of 80s in there, isn't there, as well?
There's a lot of Bowie, so there's a lot of
In Don't Chase the Dead, there's that kind of like spacey Bowie feel that he kind of recreates on Mechanical Animals. It's there very strongly, I think.
Yeah, it's very much like Aladdin Sane, Ziggy Stardust era. It's got the 50s in it. It's kind of, there's something elegiac about it. And it's kind of got like, when he brought in, said there's going to be a country element to it, it's kind of got a country element, but it's, like I said, it's more, it's not like country and western. But it's that kind of really soul-searching, like just on the right side of schmaltz that you know, a good country song does.
Well, you worked with Shooter Jennings on this album.
Shooter Jennings, yeah.
You can definitely feel that come through. You know, it retains a little bit of the slightly kind of almost outlaw country vibe that he had on The Pale Emperor, which I think has a lot in common with this album as well. It's weird. I actually feel like this has more in common with The Pale Emperor than it does Heaven Upside Down overall, to be honest. Like, it feels like a natural successor to that. Yeah, it's just musically, it's really interesting. I mean, musically, I think it's really good. I like the quite regular nods, I feel, to the Mechanical Animals era. I think Let Me Paint You With My Love has that kind of like disassociative style, as in the song, kind of spacey, acoustic-y, futuristic vibe to it.
Yeah. But halfway and one step forward, they'll crop up again later on in the album. But it's got these really lush guitar textures, these really expansive guitar textures. And it's such good songwriting, and it's so dramatic. Mm. And then you kind of get to this kind of industrial stage with sort of Infinite Darkness, which is Perfume, which is, I think, is the one slightly filler track on the album. It's very classic Manson. And then you get to these three albums at the three tracks, and it's quite short for a Manson album. It's only like about 46, 47 minutes or so. Mm. 42 minutes, actually. We got Kick My Head Together, Solve Coagula, and Broken Needle. And they're the most genuinely racked and brilliantly written songs I think in his catalogue. And I'm particularly obsessed with those three songs, but it's just a journey that you get to this point. I mean, Keep My Head Together actually reminds me a little bit of You Spin Me Round Like a Record by who's it by again?
Pete, what's his face?
Pete Burns.
Yeah, yeah. Dead. Oh my God, it's gone now. It'll come back to me.
It's a rock and roll song though, isn't it, that one?
Yeah, and then, Broken Needle, which starts off this kind of acoustic strum.
Dead or Alive, they're called, by the way.
Sorry?
Dead or Alive, the original band.
Dead or Alive, that's it, yeah. I should know that. I actually own the single of that record, I bought it at the time. But Broken Needle is just so self kind of eviscerating. And there's a lot of songs where there's like a lot of double meanings. The title is a double meaning. Like, does it mean like we are chaos, as in we are all chaos? Or is he using the rural we, like I am chaos?
Mm.
It's interesting. And there's like a line on Broken Needle where it goes, I'll never play you again. And that could mean like, we'll never be together again, or it means like, I'll never play you like a fool again.
Mm. Yeah. I think lyrically it's a really interesting album. Cause like we said, it feels like there's a lot of self-reckoning going on here. You know, Manson has to, I guess, work out where he fits in a world where, you know, being problematic, being controversial just isn't really kind of, accepted and celebrated in the same way that I guess it was before. Some of the lyrics on here I find really interesting. I think it's on We Are Chaos, where he says, maybe I'm a mystery, I could end up your misery. On Perfume, he says, if you conjure the devil, you better make sure you got a bed for him to sleep in. I mean, there's definitely this kind of acknowledgement of him as this kind of, you know, potentially problematic character.
Jonathan, you go ahead.
Oh, we're probably going to talk about the same thing. But yeah, I mean, it goes through lots of different emotional stages, as he probably would do in a lot of things. But, you know, some of it's despair. So Solve Coagula, which is, I think that's like a kind of alchemical term.
I looked it up, actually, for Lyrics Corner.
Yeah.
It was inscribed on an image of Baphomet drawn in 1865 by the French occultist Eliphas Levi. Probably pronounce that incorrectly.
Yeah, it's a term used in alchemy, isn't it?
The solve is separate and coagula is joined together. And this BBC feature at least says it's the powers of binding and loosing usurped from God. But yeah, separate and joined together.
Yeah,
Latin words.
Yeah, so it's used in alchemy, you know, turning base metal into gold. But there's that line that goes, I'm not special, I'm just broken and I don't want to be fixed.
Yeah, I've got that line marked out as well.
And, you know, that's kind of pretty desperate. But see, I love bands where they just basically hit the bottom line. Like, that's why I love Swans. It's like, there's nothing more depressing than that. But I always found that really reassuring. It's like, okay, right, that's the bottom end. There's only up from here. But it's nice to have it's helpful to have that absolute bottom articulated. And it gives you something to orientate yourself around. So, yeah, I just think, like, especially like those three songs, but the journey towards it, I love Halfway and One Step Forward. I like pretty much the entire album, but it's just when you get to those last three songs, it really, oh my God, it just, I play them over and over again. And I haven't felt this kind of attached to a Manson record since Hollywood.
Yeah.
Have we mentioned his dad passing away as well? Because that was a massive thing around the time he did the last record.
It was just before, because I talked to him about it.
Yeah, and I think this as well, like Jonathan, you mentioned there's sort of a process on this record, or a processing. It's a processing of emotions. And I think there's a lot about that as well, and a lot about loss. If you look at something like Infinite Darkness, and thinking about your place in the world, as we were just talking about, and he says, first class on the astral plane, just because you're famous doesn't mean you're worth anything in this world or the next one or the one before. There's kind of a lot of that same thing he was thinking about when you spoke to him last about kind of, you know, your place in the world. And I think there was a metaphor about his dad being a satellite or something, wasn't there, in the last record? And it sounds like he's contemplating death and kind of what his existence means, you know, and kind of everyone's the same when you're dead, sort of thing. And he says you're dead longer than you're alive, you know, so then you kind of, I guess, you have to think about what you do with that life as well.
It's weird because it doesn't, Manson being introspective is not a new thing. He's been doing this for 15 or whatever it is years now. Like Eat Me Drink Me kind of marked a real turning point for that, but there's just definitely something more engaging about the way he's kind of dissecting himself on this album. And maybe it is because it's kind of in the context of, you know, being a very different industry in a different world to where we were before, that we, you know, read more into it than we might have otherwise. But it just really feels like there's a lot of self-reckoning going on. And it makes it a really compelling and interesting listen. And I do, you know, I agree. I think musically, this is certainly the most accomplished thing he's done in a long time. And it feels like the most kind of concise, and like he's finally found the right combination of sounds and writing styles that just all feels like a one coherent vision. I mean, I do think there was a lot of that on The Pale Emperor, but I did feel like Heaven Upside Down just felt like this kind of not very good smorgasbord of stuff he'd done before. It was all kind of like, oh, this sounds like that era, but not quite as good. Oh, this sounds like that era, but not quite as good. But this sounds much more like its own thing. Even though, as I say, I do think there's a lot of Mechanical Animals on here, which is a good thing by me.
Yeah, I mean, there's things he hasn't really like done musically before on there. But also, like you said, the reason why it's engaging is, I think, you know, in the past, he was kind of vacillating between, should I be political? Should I be personal? And like I said, there wasn't this kind of completeness of vision, but I like the fact that this does have a completeness of vision, but it goes through, but like we said, it goes through lots of different stages, musically, emotionally. And, you know, for me, the albums that always feel the most complete are the ones that also can feel very sprawling, like Imperial Triumphant, for instance, where it's just like, it's a sprawling vision, but there's a world. Like I've always gone about this, but there's a world, you know, you kind of get into. And so this is kind of spawning emotionally, but I never kind of always think with, especially with art or music, whether what they're saying is right or wrong, but whether there's a truthfulness in it. And that just comes out through the music. And I just think this album, whether you're going to agree with the, you know, minute or the literal things of what he's saying, but there's a real truthfulness to it that maybe you can empathize with, you know, to some extent from your own very different position in the world. But yeah, I just think this is the closest thing to actual honesty that he's really done. Not that he's never been a sharp lyricist in the past, but yeah, this album, it just feels like I said, it feels like a new era for him.
Definitely. Any more final thoughts on We Are Chaos L?
No, I agree with you about that sort of honesty and authenticity. It feels like he's hiding less about how he feels, or whether that's in the music or from himself. And it kind of, you know, it's got witticisms in there, and there's always kind of stuff you can cross-reference from other albums as well, or certain words or certain philosophies or certain references to certain literary texts. And I'm sure there's a lot more going on in here, but it feels less, the things that he's talking about feel less obscured by those kinds of techniques, is what I would say.
Definitely. It's a fascinating album, and yeah, it's a very honest album, and I think it'll be an album that people kind of dissect and read into for quite some time.
Yeah, it's also a very portentous release date.
Very true, yes. Out on 9/11.
I'm sure that wasn't accidental.
Yeah, you'd struggle to believe that's a coincidence, no, Marilyn Manson. So yeah, that's We Are Chaos. That is out on Friday. Shall we do some reader questions. We only got a little handful of them today.
Can I read the first one because I haven't got an answer?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. Ben Wilmot asks, what's your most disappointing release of 2020 so far?
Now, me and Jonathan talked about this before we started recording, and he reckons we might have the same one, but I'm keen to know what yours is. So what's yours, Jonathan?
Okay, well, just a little preamble. So disappointing means that I had hopes for it that weren't kind of fulfilled. So there's been lots of shocking albums this year. But the one I had hope for, and I was like, oh, is that it, was Lamb of God.
You are correct. We do have the same choice.
Yeah. And like, you know, I'm not the world's biggest groove metal fan. Usually it's just knucklehead music. Like, whatever I think of Pantera musically, I kind of blame them for kind of like turning metal into music for jocks. And whatever you think about the musically. But here's one groove metal band that was genuinely, that, you know, I had genuinely respect for. I think, you know, it always comes across musically. I just think that, you know, Randy is one of the most honourable people in our world. And this album was just, it didn't really add anything to their canon for me very much at all. And it's okay. But that's the one album that I had high hopes for that didn't fulfil those hopes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think Lamb of God are kind of, they're still a great band, of course, one of the greatest metal bands of the last 20 years plus. But, you know, we had them on the cover earlier in the year. I don't think this is a bad album at all. I actually think it's a good album. Like, I think Memento Mori is great. I like Checkmate. I think Reality Bath is good. I think the tracks with Jamie Jaster and Chuck Billion are really good. I just think they suffer by comparison as much as anything. You know, when like Trivium, we talk about that album all the time on this podcast because that's such a good example of a band who have, you know, they've experimented a bit here and there over the years, and now they've honed their craft into something that is just absolutely at the top of what they do. Whereas it feels like Lamb of God have put out a quite good Lamb of God album, which just doesn't put itself up on the same pedestal. I think it's probably a bit better than Sturman Drunk, but I think Sturman Drunk at least had some really interesting and particularly memorable moments on it, like the track that Chino's on and stuff. I still play that track all the time. I'm sure Elle does as well. He's nodding.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, obviously a lot of water had gone under the bridge with them personally in the intervening time between the last two albums. And I just, none of that really kind of, I felt that didn't really kind of come across. It's just, yeah, it's just if you really kind of, like I said, like in Manson's case, when you really, not saying it's not processing emotions, but when you do it really well artistically, there's always going to be something new in there because you're always going to come up with some kind of personal revelation. Mm. And that usually will reflect itself in the music. And I just couldn't really find it in the last record.
I think that's fair. It's been a really, really, really good year for heavy music. Like, that my kind of top five or six albums of the years could have all been my number one in a good few other years that I've been doing this. So I think, yeah, I think it just suffers by comparison, and it's just kind of like, it's a good album, but just being a good album probably doesn't quite, stand up in this year, especially. Although, you know, it's got its big fans. Joe Daly reviewed it for the magazine. He absolutely loves it. Like, gave it 9 out of 10 and really, you know, stood by that. So, it's obviously doing some things for someone, which is good. Brendan Crabb says, there's a new James Bond film due to be released soon, pandemic pending. We've had Chris Cornell sing You Know My Name in the past, but which artist from the world of metal could deliver a, I can't say this without sounding like Alan Partridge, a quality Bond theme song?
I'm listening to his podcast at the moment from the Oast House. I'm getting some tips for this podcast.
Has he got a new podcast?
Yeah, called From the Oast House with Alan Partridge.
Oh my God, I need to hear that. Other podcasts are indeed available, apparently.
Yeah, I'm getting some tips about what we should do on this podcast, how to improve it, from the legend. Nice. My choice for this, I instantly went to Leprous, because their last album, Pitfalls, was so dramatic. And I think it's really good to have a really dramatic song when you're talking about Bond. If you look at that record, every song was dramatic, but there was At the Bottom, Distant Bells, The Sky is Red. There's just such a huge amount of drama, and his voice is just incredible. And yeah, they'd probably have to like tone down the progressiveness slightly in order to create a single style song, but the drama that you could get on there would be amazing.
That's a good choice. Yeah, drama kind of influenced my thing as well, because I was thinking of someone who could deliver a really kind of epic, interesting thing. And I thought Devin Townsend, because
that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think he could deliver the goods, and I think he looks like he could be in a James Bond film because he's just such an interesting looking fella. So I'd back that.
He's a bit too cosmic for James Bond these days.
Well, just give James Bond the spaceship then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe if they did what's the one they did in space with Jaws?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't watch a lot of James Bonds.
Yeah. So I had kind of three. Actually, I think Manson would make a great James Bond track. In fact, Halfway and One Step Forward would sounds like it could be a Bond soundtrack.
Wow.
New album with that lyric about champagne problems.
I'm not sure it literally is talking about champagne though.
But yeah, poison champagne. Then you just got to kind of think of if you want dramatic, Septic Flesh could be really good.
Wow, that is dramatic.
I was not expecting it to just come out with that.
Just trying to think, you know, with the orchestras and stuff. But also, a really obvious choice would be Alter Bridge.
Yeah.
That would be good.
How have they not been used for soundtrack music yet? I mean, they did Edge's theme song in WWE, of course, but interesting.
Yeah, Soaring, Anthemic, appeals to lots of different people across genres, mainstream enough to work.
I'd watch it. It's the new one.
I think Manson is the best choice.
I think so. I was just trying to imagine Miles Kennedy singing the new James Bond movie.
You could see him in the video, couldn't you? He'd be like standing on top of like a ship or something with his arms open and his shirt half undone, like screaming into the wind.
He goes, "There's no time to die."
What was that?
Just like that.
That was my attempt at emulating one of the best singers in rock music. So, good.
Oh, wait, hang on. Yeah, I get it now. It was Ozzy.
No, it was supposed to be Miles.
Oh.
Why would I randomly sing Ozzy?
The voice sounded more like Ozzy Osbourne.
Well, I'm.
And then he's the greatest singers.
You should be shocked that I can't emulate Miles Kennedy. Oh, let's do the last question. Do you want to take this one, Jonathan?
Yeah. So Matt Grimster, which is a great name, asks, "What feature, article, interview, etc., have you done that you are the most proud of?"
Oh, what are you most proud of, Elle? Doesn't have to be a Metal Hammer one. I wouldn't judge you, but it probably should be.
I don't know, because I hate lists and ordering things, and I'm proud of. I don't know. Probably one of the most memorable ones was my first cover for Hammer, because that was Baby Metal, and it was, we were putting them on the cover, and it was like the Baby Metal phenomenon, and it was like, what are Baby Metal? Where did they come from? Who are their fans? Are they big in Japan? How are they going to get big in the UK? Is it going to last? Are metal fans going to embrace them? And there was so much to get stuck into that it really did feel like it was looking at a phenomenon. It wasn't just writing a piece about a new record, which is obviously fun, or a person. It was kind of, what is going on here? And so that was really interesting, especially because it was sort of starting from zero almost. You know, most of the time when you do a cover feature, it's a very established artist that you've known about for a long time, and there's so much background and information. But with Baby Metal, it's kind of like, this is a little bit mysterious. How can we find out about it? So I really enjoyed doing that one. It felt like it kind of captured a moment.
That was, yeah, very, very big moment for the band and the magazine and the metal scene, I think. I backed that. That was a great feature. I know it's not like, I was proud that we, of your Architects cover feature that you did as well at the start of 2018, was it?
I thought that
was really good.
Thanks, Merlin.
Jonathan, is there any stuff you're particularly fond of?
Yeah, I mean, there's two for two different reasons. One for a similar reason as Baby Metal for Eleanor, which was Heilung, the first Heilung feature that we did.
Mm.
And it was kind of a bit of a fluke that happened, but I knew, you know, it was soon after, wasn't that long after that, you know, their first two performances at Castle Fest and Midgardsblut. But you just can tell that band were going to be absolutely huge. So we were doing our albums of the year, and I said, right, well, you have to put this Heilung show in. And I was going to give like a little interview. I thought it was going to be a 10-minute interview just for a quote. All I did was one quote. We ended up talking about 35 minutes because they just finished putting all the footage together for what became Leafer, you know, the live DVD, Blu-ray, album, whatever. And they hadn't even been signed yet. But I just knew that band were going to be huge. So we were kind of like the first magazine to really grasp that. And I'm still amazed at how few other magazines really picked up on them, or other outlets picked up on them. But you can't, like I always said, you can't underestimate how huge that band were. And we were there ahead of everyone. So I'm really proud of that. And across. And the one that had the most meaning for me was Shamash, where, you know, sometimes, you know, you go into, you got a brief, but sometimes, you know, stories just emerge from the conversation that you have. And again, in the same way that we're talking about Manson, you know, so I went to Basel, and it was the only face-to-face interview he was doing. Because we knew each other a little bit, me and CSR, the front man. And I just wouldn't let him go, you know. So in the same way that we're talking about Manson, about, you know, reaching a difficult point and how do you go beyond that. And so he'd produced this huge triple album beforehand and just did not know where to go next. And he had to be really honest with himself and saying, I've got nothing. Let's explore this. Let's explore this kind of sense of despair. And the way he talked about kind of that was so honest. And when you talk about something that's so honest, it becomes such a unique story, but also such a universal story. And it was a way about kind of talking about depression that I felt was in a way that I hadn't really come across before. But so honest and so kind of ultimately liberating at the end. And so I think, yeah, that's a piece that just I really felt like had the most meaning for me, as and trying to articulate that as well too, because yeah, I had no idea what was, you know, it's always good to go with a slightly open mind, and I had no idea what was going to come out of that feature, but it was just so honest, and I knew it was difficult for him to be so, and yeah, a really amazing story. And I say story, it's something that you can actually kind of learn something from and came out of it. So that's a piece that's had the most meaningful to me, about really being honest about hitting a brick wall and not trying to be super positive about it. Go with the negativity, but that will take her over to the next stage, because it's only a stage, that negativity.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece, and it's a very good, you know, very slightly different reason, I guess, for having an attachment to that. Fantastic choices, both of you. I think, I mean, for me, a lot of it's down to getting to interview artists that I've always wanted to do stuff with and managing to not totally fuck it up. So when I did the Marilyn Manson cover in 2017, I was quite happy with how that turned out, because it was like, you know, he was the one artist I'd always wanted to be able to interview over anyone else. And you kind of get to a point where you think, well, maybe it'll never actually happen, especially when it's someone quite enigmatic like Manson. But I was quite happy with how that all turned out. And not really kind of, I mean, I thought the feature was good fun. I was quite happy with it, but just kind of getting to go on Air Force One was obviously just, you know, can't even call it like a dream come true, because when I first started reading Metal Hammer, Air Force One didn't exist. So it's like, if someone had told me in 2000 that I'd be on a plane flown by Bruce Dickinson, you'd be like, what? Like, it wouldn't even compute. So that was a very proud moment. And in terms of like editorially more, our 300th issue a couple of years back, that took a real lot of work that me and Hammer photographer Jemery Saffer kind of mostly strung together out in Chicago, and I thought that came out pretty cool, so I was really pleased with that. And my first ever Hammer cover feature as well, which was Avenged Sevenfold. I've been at the magazine for nearly 3 years by that point, and I'd still not done a cover feature, so it was cool to be able to do that, and also do it for a band that I've kind of grown up with, so that was quite nice. And there'll be more proud moments to come, no doubt about it, lads. We've got lots more coming this year. We've got some really exciting issues coming up, and one of those, of course, is out right now. So if you haven't picked up our Metallica issue yet, go and get it. It looks lovely, featuring some amazing artwork by the awesome Wolf Skull Jack. I'm looking at it right now, that's why it just came to mind. So yeah, keep on trucking on. We'll have lots more to come throughout the year, but in the meantime, that is it for this week. We'll be back next week, as always, on the Mount Hummer podcast. And
I won't be back next week. I'm going on holiday in my house.
You around, Jonathan?
I imagine so.
Let's hang out. We'll see you next week. Apart from Elle, have a lovely time away, Elle.
In my house.
In your house. Have a lovely time at home, Elle. No more than 5 people at any time with you, remember? Yeah. But anyway, we'll see the rest of you next week. So take care, everybody. Stay metal. Goodbye.
All right. Bye.
Bye.